As the federal government here confronts lockdowns in three states, Prime Minister Scott Morrison is calling for a change to the advice on who should get the AstraZeneca vaccine. The Prime Minister says he's repeatedly urged the vaccine advisory group, ATAGI, to recommend AstraZeneca for people below the age of 60.
It's a constant appeal, I can assure you. It's a constant appeal that the situation that Australia faces should be managed on the balance of risk, as ATAGI has said to me in the past. Well, it's for them to now constantly reconsider how that balance of risk applies and provide their advice accordingly.
That's the Prime Minister yesterday. Well, ATAGI says the preference is people under the age of 60 get Pfizer, but at this stage there is still nowhere near enough Pfizer to go around. Julie Leask is the adjunct professor at the Sydney University School of Public Health and a visiting fellow at the National Centre for Immunisation Research and Surveillance. She's also an advisor to the WHO on improving vaccine uptake. Julie Leask, welcome back to Breakfast.
Hi, Fran.
You heard the Prime Minister there. Do you interpret those comments from the Prime Minister as putting pressure on ATAGI to update its advice, to change its advice for the risk benefit?
It's a little hard to interpret what he's saying because he's saying that it's up to them to constantly reconsider. I think he clearly wants that to happen. He wants the utilisation of the AstraZeneca vaccine to be greater and a stronger recommendation to have that if you're under 60 would probably make that happen. But it's so important that their advice remains independent. And it is just advice, of course. It's up to the government to decide how they manage that advice in a programmatic sense.
Well, that's true, but the risk has changed because we now see the Delta variant on the loose. We've got three of our states in lockdown. More than half the population is locked down. That change in risk, has that been reflected, do you think, in the ATAGI recommendations? I think they meet weekly. As the Prime Minister says, they're constantly reviewing their advice. Have they reviewed it enough considering the change risk?
Yes, they are meeting regularly and they are reviewing their advice. For example, when the Sydney outbreak was ramping up, they recommended that the dosing interval for the AstraZeneca vaccine be narrowed from 12 weeks to 6 to 8 weeks. And I would imagine that that would happen in other states where there's an outbreak. They have also been a little bit softer with their language around the preferencing of Pfizer. So always giving leeway for flexibility in terms of individual decisions to have AstraZeneca vaccine if you're under 60. They were never rigid on that to begin with. They always knew that the context could change, and that's why there was leeway in their recommendations saying that Pfizer was preferred for now under 60s rather than AstraZeneca vaccine being banned for under 60s.
And that's true. And the head of ATAGI says that their job is to make recommendations, but the decisions are ultimately up to the government. Is it fair for the Prime Minister to say that ATAGI's cautious approach has delayed the rollout? As you say, the message we really got from ATAGI earlier was that, you know, the preferred vaccine for under 50s and then under 60s is Pfizer. That's the message we heard. We didn't hear that, you know, anyone could go and get AstraZeneca and it was relatively safe. We didn't really hear that message. Should we have?
I think it would have been good for that message to be more clearly communicated by all leaders and possibly for the PM to try to get concordance on the programmatic recommendation that came from ATAGI's advice so that people were clear that there wasn't a ban on AstraZeneca for those younger age groups so that GPs could feel more confident in offering the vaccine after a risk-benefit discussion with people. And I think the communication has been wanting all the way along, and such that when people were told by the PM that it would be okay to have it under 40, everyone was shocked as if it was a reversing of the recommendations when it
because
wasn't.
It sounded like a reversing of the recommendations. I mean, I was shocked, and I'm looking at this stuff every day. So what I'm saying is that messaging from ATAGI, their language around, you know, the Pfizer is the preferred vaccine for under 60s was not the message that really was communicated early on.
No, and I think in retrospect that should have been picked up on, and the communication around that, the leeway they were giving there made more clear. They could have been quite rigid and said, no, don't have it if you're under 60 or under 50 at the time in April when this first came up. But they deliberately didn't do that, so they retained choice of people to be able to access the AstraZeneca vaccine under, at the time, 50, such that if there was a particular situation where someone was at greater risk or more concerned about their risk, they still had the option of having that vaccine. So it was good advice, but the communication around it and the programmatic coordination around it has been the problem.
Okay, so let's go to that, because ATAGI provides recommendations based on a range of medical and non-medical factors. We've established that, but the communication would have been could have been different. What are the different considerations ATAGI weighs up when they reach their conclusions, and do they factor in the impact of their advice on public confidence in the vaccine?
Most definitely. Yes, most definitely.
So they would have known this could have an impact on hesitancy.
Yes, it was a very difficult decision for them. And they were very clear about that in their statement on the 8th of April, which the statements, by the way, are not easy to find. I mean, that's part of the problem.
They're not.
But the statement actually is quite detailed in the things that they weighed when they made this decision. They knew that it could affect public confidence. They knew it would affect access and rollout. But they had the public safety top of mind when they made that decision. They knew it could affect the confidence of people in neighbouring countries where there was a lot of COVID, but who were relying on the AstraZeneca vaccine, where the risk-benefit equation was quite different. Mm. So they acknowledged all of those dilemmas, and I think that's so important in good risk communication, to have that acknowledgement and that clarity and transparency around what's considered when making a difficult decision.
So what's missing here? If you say they did the right deliberation, they factored in the right health consequences, but they left it loose enough for the risk situation to be factored in, what's missing? Why? Because the Prime Minister is clearly saying that the advice has derailed the vaccine rollout. The truth is not enough people are getting vaccinated quickly enough in Australia. We heard statistics from one hub yesterday where only 50 shots of AstraZeneca were handed out, as against 8,000 of Pfizer. A lot of people are reluctant. What's missing here? One listener's written in and said, why doesn't the government develop a campaign to encourage over 60s to have the AstraZeneca vaccine? You know, do we need a better public health message? Could this turn this around still?
We have reasonable uptake in those older age group for vaccine for one dose at least. So that's a good thing. There's about 10% of Australians who are holding off for Pfizer because they don't want to have AstraZeneca, but they still plan to eventually have the COVID vaccine.
I think it's higher. I think the last survey I saw this morning was 20%.
Well, if you factor in the proportion of people who've already had the vaccine, then you're looking at the remainder, who are, so 66% are still yet to have a single dose of the entire population, and it's 15% of that 66%. So that's about 9.9%. It is an issue that we don't have good access to AstraZeneca vaccine in terms of confidence, right? We have good access, but people are concerned about the side effects. Some are, and they're holding off. And that is affecting our rollout, as is the lack of supply of the Pfizer vaccine as well. I think what's missing, Fran, is that we've not really had strong communication coordination from the federal government so far. We need to have a much better approach to that collaborative sort of communication. And we also need a mechanism at the federal government level for all the states and territories, program managers of vaccination, to be able to meet together with other key stakeholders with the federal government and discuss the issues as they come up, so that there's that mechanism. The government removed that National Immunisation Committee some years ago, and we need that committee back because we don't have that kind of programmatic exchange mechanism at a federal level anymore like we used to have, that helped us with programs like the HPV vaccine rollout, which was very complex itself.
Okay, so in the absence of that committee, what do we need now and who should spearhead it? I noticed the New South Wales Health Minister, Brad Hazzard, yesterday rolling out some comparative statistics. If you're over 60, he said you've got a 1 in 200 chance of dying from COVID, whereas if you're, you've got a 1 in 2 million chance of dying from a blood clot from AstraZeneca. Do we need more of that kind of messaging, and who should be responsible for pulling this together? Is it the federal government? Is it the health department? Is it individual states? Who is it?
I think having key messages from the federal government that are timely, easy to get, well packaged is useful. There are efforts happening now, including through the National Centre for Immunisation Research, to do that. There's also, all of us have a responsibility to who are in vaccination to help others give that information. I mean, some of us are running many, many webinars to help people navigate the difficult, challenging risk communication.
I appreciate that. And it's difficult for doctors. I mean, doctors, by their nature of what they do, I suppose, are risk adverse, and they go to the experts, which is ATAGI primarily, and the AMA and the Royal College for their advice. The media has played a part in this, because the media too is acting off the ATAGI advice as announced by the government. But right now, do we need some kind of broad public health campaign in a hurry around AstraZeneca? Would you be suggesting that?
Yes, I think for the over 60s, it would be reasonable to have some strong messaging.
But what about the under 60s at a time of when three states are locked down? Should we be getting that message to the under 60s that it's safe?
Well, I was just about to say that. And for the under 60s, there should be, as they're doing, certainly in Sydney where I am, a strong message that you should consider AstraZeneca vaccine because of the changed risk-benefit profile. And that's what, ATAGI have been communicating as well. Look, it's a very difficult one, Fran, because there are these very small but serious risks from the AstraZeneca vaccine, about 2 in 100,000 with the TTS, the clotting. Yet there is this very real and present risk of COVID now, where the balance, if you like, is tipping in favour of having a vaccine right now. And I'm having my second AstraZeneca on Monday. So it is important that people vaccinate. It's important that we get clear messages, but it's never easy when there are trade-offs and risks to be thought about on either side of it. Ultimately, I think people having a conversation with their GP is important, because it is an individual decision, but people should remember it's also a decision they make on behalf of other people, because our vaccination status affects other people's health as well.
That's right. Julie Leask, thanks so much for joining us again on Breakfast.
You're welcome.
Julie Leask is an adjunct professor at the Sydney University School of Public Health.